coffee shops. There are a lot of delicious places to eat. It's a good place to go where you find people who speak English as well. Thanks, Slawek. My name is Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell, Anna Mateo, and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is John Russell.
Around 110 million years ago, a dinosaur ate some plants in what is now Western Canada, before suddenly dying. That creature is now giving important information about ancient plant-eating dinosaurs. Scientists reported recently that fossilized contents of the creature's stomach were found along with its skeleton. The fossils were discovered in the Canadian province of Alberta. They are said to be the best-preserved remains of any plant-eating dinosaur. The stomach contents even show the cellular structure of leaves from the plants the dinosaur ate. Caleb Brown is a paleontologist at the Royal Tyrrell Museum of Paleontology in Alberta. He was the lead writer of a research report that appears in the online publication Royal Society Open Science. Brown noted that direct evidence of the diet of plant-eating dinosaurs is very rare. The creature was about 5.5 meters long, weighed at least a ton, and was a member of a group called nodosaurs. Its name is Borealopelta markmichelli. It had a wide body and a small head. Its body had bony skin and a large spike on each shoulder. The creature's stomach had leaves from a kind of fern, as well as very few leaves of different kinds of evergreens. Charcoal, a black material left after things are burned, was also found in its stomach. To researchers, that finding suggests the dinosaur had been eating in an area that had recently had a fire. Scientists also reported finding many gastroliths, or gizzard stones. These are objects swallowed by modern birds and other animals to help the stomach break down food. I'm John Russell.
In the United States, public television stations are launching a new show for children in June. The PBS Kids cartoon series is called Hero Elementary. It stars a group of young superheroes. The show is set inside an elementary school, also called a grade school. In the United States, children from about age 4 to age 11 go to such a school. The superheroes are 4 grade school students. They must learn how to use their superpowers as best they can. One girl, Lucita Sky, can fly, but she is afraid of high places. Another girl, Sarah Snap, has the power to make herself appear anywhere immediately or in a snap. That, by the way, is superhero language for teleport. Next, there is a boy called Benny Bubbles, who uses, that's right, bubbles to create a protective area. Superhero language for a force field. Finally, a boy named AJ Gadgets owns and operates a large collection of cool, unusual devices. Superhero language for, you guessed it, gadgets. In addition to his cool gadgets, there is something else about AJ. He has a condition called autism spectrum disorder. It affects his ability to communicate and interact with other people. Autism presents itself on different levels, from severe to high performing. So when we say someone is on the spectrum, we mean they have some level of autism. AJ Gadgets is on the high performing end of the spectrum. Some of his behavior is common to the autistic experience. For example, he does not like loud noises or wearing wet clothes. And he likes some things to stay the same. He likes to have his favorite things around him and hates it when they are lost. People familiar with autism might recognize these signs of autism in the show. However, the creators are perfectly fine if others do not. The children's show purposely does not directly talk about the issue of autism, except for two shows running later in the series. AJ's autism just happens to be part of him. It is not the main part. As a valuable team member, he always comes to the rescue. The creators of Hero Elementary, Christine Ferraro and Carol Lynn Parente, talked with the Associated Press about the show. Ferraro said, "There is so much strength in showing a child on the spectrum as just one of the team." Ferraro said, "AJ is just part of the group. And that's something that we don't see a lot on television," she added. "And that's why we thought it was really important." The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports that in 2016, 1 in 54 children were diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder by age 8. In 2014, the estimate was 1 in every 59 children. Linda Semensky works for PBS Kids. She said she likes the idea of AJ's inclusion. This means that a child on the autism spectrum is included in the team and treated just like the other children. Creators Ferraro and Parente have worked for many years with the children's TV series Sesame Street. In 2015, that show introduced Julia, a 4-year-old girl with autism. However, when creating Hero Elementary, Ferraro and Parente did not plan on having a child with autism as one of the superheroes. They said it just happened naturally. The PBS Kids series also has a teacher, Mr. Sparks. He helps the children use their own problem-solving skills, such as observing, investigating, testing, and predicting. He also teaches an important life lesson. If at first you don't succeed, try again. And often, the school-age superheroes do not succeed. "You don't come into this world knowing how to do everything," said Ferraro. "And so, these kids struggle to learn in school, just like our kids struggle to learn how to do things." Semensky says she also likes this part of the show, children learning to solve their own problems. She said she sees too many shows where an adult solves the problems. On the TV series, team members learn to help themselves and each other. AJ's teammates are aware of his needs. In one show, the team searches for his lost backpack. The show's creators said they hope this shows children the importance of understanding others and normalize the idea that all kids are different. Parente said the show demonstrates understanding the different needs of a friend, whether it is autism or something else. Kids with autism may be a little different and have different needs, said Semensky. However, she added, there is a place for kids with autism, and there is a place for their own valuable skills as well. I'm Anna Mateo.
America's IBM has ended its facial recognition business and raised concerns about how police forces might be using the technology. IBM and other major technology companies have been developing facial recognition systems using machine learning methods and artificial intelligence, or AI. Facial recognition systems are designed to identify individuals in photo databases or from video surveillance. Facial recognition accuracy has greatly improved in recent years. The technology is used by police in several major cities and by some U.S. government agencies. Privacy groups and civil rights activists have criticized such use of the technology. Several studies have shown the technology can have difficulties correctly guessing a person's race or sex. Critics say such failures could violate a person's civil rights. Activists have also warned that facial recognition systems could be used for mass surveillance of citizens. IBM's CEO, Arvind Krishna, announced his company's decision on Monday in a letter to U.S. lawmakers. He said IBM would stop offering facial recognition software and end all research and development of the technology. Krishna said IBM strongly opposes the use of any facial recognition technology to be used for mass surveillance, racial profiling, or violations of basic human rights and freedoms. Krishna wrote that responsible use of the technology can increase transparency and help police protect communities. But he added, it must not promote discrimination or racial injustice. Ongoing protests across the United States have raised new questions about racial injustice and the use of technology by police to carry out surveillance on demonstrators and American neighborhoods. The protests, which started after the death of George Floyd, have centered on police violence and racial inequality in America. Floyd, a 46-year-old black man, died on May 25th after a white police officer in Minneapolis, Minnesota, kneeled on Floyd's neck for nearly 9 minutes. The incident was caught on video. Krishna wrote this week, "We believe now is the time to begin a national dialogue on whether and how facial recognition technology should be employed by domestic law enforcement agencies." In the past, IBM had tested its facial recognition software with the New York Police Department. Krishna sent his letter to a group of Democratic congressmen who have been working on police reform legislation fueled by the mass protests over Floyd's death. The reform bill could include restrictions on police use of facial recognition technology. Microsoft and Amazon have also developed facial recognition systems. However, Microsoft has joined critics in calling for restrictions on the use of the technology by government agencies. In March, Microsoft President Brad Smith praised Washington State for passing a law to regulate the technology. The law requires testing and transparency measures and provides safeguards aimed at upholding civil liberties, Smith said. Claire Garvey is a researcher at Georgetown University's Center on Privacy and Technology in Washington, D.C. She told the Associated Press that many U.S. law enforcement agencies use facial recognition software built by lesser-known companies. These include Japan-based NEC and European companies Edamia and Cognitech. A smaller number of law enforcement agencies have partnered with Amazon, which has received strong criticism from privacy activists since it introduced its recognition software in 2016. I'm Brian Lynn.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int, or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Today, we explore a national park and UNESCO World Heritage Site in the American Southwest. This national park, near the city of Carlsbad, New Mexico, is unusual in a major way. It is mostly underground. Carlsbad Caverns National Park contains more than 100 caves below the surface of the desert. Most are closed to the public, but anyone can visit the main attraction, one of the largest caves in the world. Huge, incredible, inspiring. Words like these come to mind as visitors enter a world of silence, darkness, and cold, almost 230 meters under the ground. An elevator lowers you into the world of Carlsbad Cavern. It is silent, except for the quiet voices of guides and visitors. It is not fully dark, though. The National Park Service has enough lighting to see many of the beautiful formations all around. The temperature in the cave is about 13 degrees Celsius.
A cavern is a large cave, but Carlsbad Cavern is really a long series of chambers. One of these is called the Big Room. The Big Room measures more than 3 hectares. The ceiling is 77 meters high. The Big Room is the single largest underground chamber ever found in North America. The Big Room and other parts of the cavern contain huge, sharp formations of minerals. People are free to explore the lit formations in the Big Room, but park rangers must guide visitors to other areas of the cave. Stalactites hang from the ceiling. Stalagmites rise from the floor. Some even meet to create a column. Other formations look like needles, popcorn, pearls, and flowers.
One of the first questions visitors might have is, how did Carlsbad Cavern form? Guides explain that it did not result from the action of waterways like other limestone caves. Its creator was sulfuric acid. The limestone developed about 250 million years ago. Then, within the last 20 million years, movements in the earth pushed the rock upward, forming the Guadalupe Mountains. Today, these mountains extend from West Texas into southeast New Mexico. The action of oil and natural gas created hydrogen sulfide in the limestone. The hydrogen sulfide reacted with oxygen in rainwater moving through the rock. Sulfuric acid developed. The acid created the caves by dissolving the limestone in its path. Later, the water and most of the acid left the caves as the Guadalupe Mountains continued to rise. This permitted fresh water to move through. The fresh water left behind minerals. These minerals became the formations and shapes on the ceilings, walls, and floors of the caves.
People are not the only visitors to Carlsbad Caverns National Park. About 400,000 Mexican free-tailed bats come from Mexico every summer to give birth in the Big Cave. As the sun goes down each day, thousands of adult bats fly out of the cave. It can take from 20 minutes to more than 2 hours for them all to leave. They go to nearby river valleys to feed on insects. Then, toward morning, they return to the bat cave within Carlsbad Cavern. Park Service rangers explain that mother bats find their babies by remembering their location, their smell, and the sound of their cry. Mothers and their babies, called pups, hang in groups on the ceiling. They spend the day resting and feeding. While the adults go out at night for food, the young bats hang out in the cave for 4 or 5 weeks. Then, in July or August, they join their mothers on these nightly flights. Finally, in late October or early November, the bats all leave and return to Mexico. But they always come back the next year.
It is possible that it was the bats that led ancient people to discover the cave. Archaeologists and others have found evidence of Ice Age hunters near the cave entrance. They have also found pieces of spear points left about 10,000 years ago. More recently, Apache Indians painted pictures at the entrance, and evidence of one of their cooking areas was found beside a nearby path. Around 1900, a teenage cowboy named James Larkin White began to explore the cave. Jim White told his story in the 1932 book, The Discovery and History of Carlsbad Caverns. Here is a reading of his description of his first sight of the bats and the big cave.
I thought it was a volcano, but then I'd never seen a volcano, nor never before had I seen bats swarm, for that matter. During my life on the range, I'd seen plenty of prairie whirlwinds, but this thing didn't move. It remained in one spot, spinning its way upward. I watched it for perhaps a half hour, until my curiosity got the better of me. Then I began investigating.
Jim White told how he built a ladder from rope, wire, and sticks, and returned to the entrance of the cave a few days later.
Standing at the entrance of the tunnel, I could see ahead of me a darkness so absolutely black it seemed a solid. The light of my lantern was but a sickly glow. Nevertheless, I forged ahead, and with each step the tunnel grew larger, and I felt as though I was wandering into the very core of the Guadalupe Mountains.
Several years later, in 1918, Jim White took a professional photographer into the cave. Ray Davis's pictures of the big room appeared in the New York Times newspaper. National interest began to grow. In 1923, scientists from the National Geographic Society explored the caves. The following year, President Calvin Coolidge named Carlsbad a national monument. Presidents can declare national monuments, but Congress must act to establish a national park. And that is what Congress did in 1930. Since then, parts of Carlsbad Caverns have been used for movie sets, weddings, even meetings of the Carlsbad City Council. Most visitors go to the main cavern, but some experienced cavers are permitted to explore five wild caves in the park. And in another one, scientists are studying microbes in search of a cure for cancer.
As for Jim White, he became chief ranger of Carlsbad Caverns. In one story in his book, he talks about all of the work that was done in the area.
I doubt if you can understand how happy this modernizing has made me. It's like the pleasant end to a dream.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.